In this episode of the Smart City Podcast, I interviewed the Chief Innovation Officer of Smarter Technology Solutions, Danielle Storey. Denny and I follow on from our conversation from the ASCA's Australian Smart Communities Conference. We talk about using technology to solve problems and some of the projects that Smarter Technology Solutions is working on across Australia. Denny also explains how Smarter Technology Solutions came to be, which I loved hearing about. She also speaks about immersing in smart cities globally and how we can think of integration as kind of a waltz in order to get the balance right. As well as this, Denny shares some insights into the emerging trends that she thinks will impact the ways that we do things moving forward in the smart city space. As always, I hope you enjoy listening to this episode as much as I enjoyed making it.
It's the Smart City Podcast, whoa, with smart city experts, here we go. Connecting smart technology, both big and small. Smart cities are making life better for all. Big data, emerging trends, self-driving cars and more. The Smart City Podcast is what you're looking for.
Hello, Danny. How are you this evening?
I'm good, thanks, Zoe. How are you?
Very well, thanks. I think we should just jump straight in while we've got good internet connection. Can you tell us a little bit about your background and what you are passionate about?
Yeah, sure. I'm Danielle Storey, the Chief Innovation Officer at Smarter Technology Solutions. My background is in technology quite broadly, mostly a system integration type background, and I guess I'm really interested in how technology can be used to solve problems in sort of an outcome-focused way. So really big on, you know, technology to solve an issue, not technologies for technology's sake. So I've just always had that interest, and obviously it's part of the reason we're having this conversation today.
Yeah, awesome. Let's talk a little bit about what sparked your interest in this smart city space.
Yeah, so I think initially we actually discussed this really briefly at ASCA last week, but for anyone who may have not have heard it, basically I am a bit of a clumsy kind of person, a million things at once, and I kept leaving my garage door open, and I simply wanted to know, when I was away from home, had I shut the garage door and be able to close it remotely? This was 4 or 5 years ago now, and when I started looking into the technology, I realized that the applications for remote monitoring technology or sensors and things like that was applicable to much more than just my garage door. I then had some follow-on discussions with my dad, who works in mining, and realized it was a huge issue in mining as well. And then I started looking at local government and the large amounts of infrastructure that they manage and the scale of the possibility and also of the challenge of managing really diverse sets of infrastructure. So I guess my main reason for being really interested in smart cities came from the fact that, you know, there's such a lot of assets and things that cities manage. You know, it directly relates to each and every one of our lives around how livable, how sustainable, how economically diverse they are. And, you know, basically the smart city space allowed me to pull together that technology interest as well as the kind of epiphany I was having about my garage door along with all those other attributes. So I guess that was the initial reason for sparking that interest in technology. And, of course, it really solves problems in our cities and towns that we live in.
Yeah, definitely. Let's talk about the technologies a little bit, and what kind of technologies have you come across that you're really interested in exploring?
Well, sort of in preparation for this, I put together a couple of notes, and I think often the technologies tend to fall in a few buckets. So they either generally are about safety and security, like CCTV and video analytics and things of that nature, perhaps even smart lighting in terms of brightening those dark alleys in our city centres and things like that. It helps with planning, so being able to understand how traffic moves, how bikes and pedestrians move through our city, it really helps people in planning. And so things like sensors to count people and bikes and traffic and those sorts of things really helps with that kind of challenge. There's efficiency, of course, in terms of remotely monitoring and triggering events when things happen, like when a light bulb blows, don't log a job for the guys to go and replace it, and then during the next round they can do so. So I guess there's that efficiency piece. And then probably the bit that I think I'm most drawn to is around sustainability. So monitoring our usage and limiting the usage of things when people aren't around, like perhaps dimming lights when people aren't around, limiting waste or unnecessary driving, or being able to detect water leaks, for example, in water metering and things like that. So I really like that sustainability aspect. And of course, with all of that, it's about, you know, collecting that information, using different sensors and technology, and then actually doing something meaningful with it. You know, simply kind of collecting the data is only kind of half of the challenge. You know, obviously it needs to lead to an outcome of some sort.
Yeah, cool. Well, let's talk about some of the projects and things that you're working on at the moment.
Well, I guess smarter technology solutions at the moment are working across 4 or 5 different councils. Everything from remotely monitoring bins to see how full they are, and then optimizing the collection routes. So, for example, daily collections might be 10% full, and using some of the analytics, we can work out which 2 days of the week to collect that bin instead of doing that 6 or 7 days a week. So the efficiency in that kind of example is really obvious. There's quite a few regional councils as well that are trying to revitalize their town centres or significant public places like water parks or main beaches or park areas. So helping them understand how people use those spaces so that they can better provide services. And the other one I've seen a lot of lately is about parking and making that more available. We're doing some really large programs as well with some of the Round 1 Smart Cities and Suburbs councils and cities to help them deliver their programs across a range of different technologies, providers, and some of them up to, you know, 1 year, 2 years in duration. So it's pretty broad at the moment. And, of course, the last thing that we're doing quite a bit of lately is helping cities and councils put together their Smart Cities and Suburbs grants for Round 2 of the federal government's funding. So, yeah, it's kind of a bit mixed at the moment, but it sort of spreads across our consulting, our design and implementation of the technologies, and also sort of ongoing support and extension of some of our existing projects. So it's kind of very varied and very geographically diverse at the moment. So it's pretty exciting.
Yeah, cool. No, I spoke to some people at Ipswich and they said I really needed to come talk to you, because when I was talking to them, they said, you know, you need to go and not work for, but work with Dani, because she's awesome and doing really cool things. And so I'm excited that I finally got to meet you last week. And I think that, yeah, listening to you just talk about some of the things you're doing and the big kind of plans you have for your company is really exciting. So I want to talk a little bit about how you kind of went from this idea of your garage to kind of going, okay, no, this is a business, and then kind of growing from there. Was that a hard transition, or did it just kind of fall into place?
I guess that's kind of quite a mixed question. So from idea, the reason I actually realized there was a huge opportunity in helping cities and towns pull those kind of visions together and make it something real was I have a history in mobile phones. So way back when BlackBerrys existed, before everybody got an iPhone for Christmas, that was sort of what government used to communicate, and it was the first sort of devices that ever left the office. And the reason I'm sort of telling this story is just to sort of show the transition over time, but from BlackBerrys to iPhones and Android devices, now to connected sensors that could be, you know, anything, an environmental sensor, a parking space, a light, a rubbish bin, my garage door, whatever. To me, they're actually not much different in the fact that a person doesn't operate the device, but it's still an electronic device that's collecting and transmitting information from outside our safe walls of our buildings, where our data is nice and secure and managed, into kind of the, I guess, the wild west of thousands of different sensors that are out there, you know, dozens of different networks that you could use, you know, hundreds of platforms that, and software pieces that you could plug in. It was really obvious that the market really needed someone or a bunch of companies to really help people along that journey.
Mm-hmm.
And when we're looking at it, actually, my business partner and I, Ash Hare, it actually seemed like almost impossible what we were trying to achieve. And certainly there are a lot of different skill sets, from the devices and the electrical engineering aspects of it, electronics engineering rather, all the way up to networks and software and integrating things together, obviously all the security and things that go with all that. It was really obvious we needed a really diverse team, and we've built that team over the last few years. And, you know, I'm thankful every day because we have a team of absolute superstars who love what they do. We have a fantastic team culture. But at the end of the day, it's funny that Ipswich mentioned that to you, because we get as excited working with innovative councils and things. So it's really nice to hear that feedback, and it's really nice to be able to work with customers that have very similar vision and ambition to our company. It's quite critical that we find those matches nicely so that we can deliver value together. But also, we don't like the technology for technology's sake. So if we're going to go ahead and put technology in, it's got to be to solve an issue, not technology looking for a problem to solve.
Mm.
And so where we find those customers that are really innovative and haven't really thought things through, like Ipswich, it's really nice to then see it come to life in their pilots and then some of their rollout programs. So, you know, I'm equally as excited about customers like that. And certainly, it felt huge when we put it together. And it was actually Ash who originally just said, like, let's just do it because nobody else is going to do it. And it was, you know, one of those tough decisions to leave a nice stable job and go and start a company and not know if it was going to work. So it was kind of a bit of a leap of faith. But, you know, the last 3 years or so have been just amazing. Pretty much all of our customers have become repeat customers, which makes growing a business rather easy because you just keep working with them and keep adding more customers and obviously keep growing our team. And I guess the other part to that is that I've run a company before, it just wasn't mine. And the whole IoT or Internet of Things, sensor technologies and whatnot, was really sort of burning a hole in the back of my head. And it was something I couldn't not do.
Mm.
So regardless of how, you know, scared, risky, you know, bigger ambitions it kind of seemed, I almost couldn't not do it. So I'm really pleased that Ash sort of gave me the push and we put the company together, and you know, we've kind of snowballed from there. But I learned a lot of things working in that previous business. We actually had also grown very quickly. We made the BRW Fast 100 in 2013, and I've scaled a company like that before, so we were keen to just dodge some of the same challenges, and we've just found different ones of our own. But by far, I think the biggest challenge has been the reason we created the company, and that is having all the knowledge to be able to put all the pieces together. And, of course, any one of our customers would tell you the same sort of thing, that it is difficult to understand how it all goes together. And I guess that's why we've become that guiding hand, I guess, for our customers to either create and shape the vision, to build it, or to help them support it and help them build the skills to support it. So, yeah, it's been a really interesting journey. And, I'm just super excited to see where it goes, because the really exciting thing, I think, is that we're really still working with those early adopters and sort of maybe now just the vast majority starting. But when you look at any of the hype cycle bell curves, you know, we're right at the beginning, really.
Yeah, definitely. No, thanks for sharing that. I find it really interesting when I talk to people that are doing that really smart city company. It's not just a tech company, but it's understanding that no one person has all the answers or the solutions. And it sounds like you're really helping councils and other clients to kind of bridge that gap between the technology and, you know, the know-how. Because, you know, we have to appreciate that the councils know a lot of things that we don't know. The governments know a lot of things that have so much information. And it's about being that, yeah, kind of guiding hand to bring both those kind of different parts of the world together. So, yeah, no, that's awesome. Let's talk a little bit about Australia as a whole, or we can talk about Queensland, whatever you feel. But I know that you've been working across Australia, nationally. And I want to talk about where you think Australia kind of ranks when it comes to smart cities.
Yeah, look, I think this one came up a lot at the Australian Smart Communities Association event a few weeks ago as well. And people seem to be interested in obviously where we rank globally, but I think it really does vary by region. So I think the amount of support, the amount of focus, the amount of vision that individual councils or individual regions have about what a smart city is or what some of the technology underpinning it can do drives, I guess, a level of maturity. I think globally, I would like to think we're sort of mid-pack, really, because in talking, one of the things we also do behind the scenes is we deal with a lot of global vendors because we don't manufacture devices ourselves and we don't make a lot of the software pieces ourselves and we don't make a lot of the bits that make up the whole puzzle. We do work with the best in the business for different pieces of the puzzle globally. And sometimes they're quite surprised at how advanced Australia is, particularly those in the US. But I do think Europe were some of the earlier movers. So I would say definitely sort of the European and even some of the Asian countries like Singapore are kind of ahead of us. But generally speaking, I do think it's a bit varied across the world. And certainly the US, in my observation, is not as advanced in the smart city space, but there are, again, pockets of innovation happening pretty much in every country. I have actually been doing a bit of research lately on the UK, and I'm a little bit surprised to not see more smart city kind of information from the UK. So it's something actually our team's looking at and exploring, and Ash, our other director, is actually heading over to Europe, particularly for Barcelona and London, to go and have a look and sort of see for ourselves and sort of, immerse ourselves in what is and isn't happening over there, to also learn from and draw on some of their experiences for those that are well more advanced than us, and also to some of those about what the barriers have been to adopting the technology for those that are a bit behind us. But, you know, short answer, I think we're mid-pack, but I would say we're toward the lower end of the mid-pack, not the upper. But in saying that, you know, for things like floods and water management or water conservation, Australia has some great opportunities and certainly is probably leading in some of those areas because of our climate and our environment. And also we have very large distances between many of our major cities, unlike a lot of places in Europe. So I think we just have different challenges and opportunities to different parts of the world, but at the same time, you know, an opportunity that's not kind of acted on might just become a waste because, you know, it's only an opportunity if you do something with it. So I'll be really interested to see what we do. Mm. I think we spoke briefly as well at the ASCA event about technologies like Hyperloop and other mobility solutions that might be able to help us bridge some of our large distances between geographies. And I mean, I'm in Darwin at the moment, so I'm quite away from my team in Brisbane and Sydney. But at the same time, some of the technology that's emerging does help bridge those gaps. And certainly economically for cities, that may actually also find some huge efficiencies. But, you know, I don't think a lot of the challenges that we are addressing are short-term problems. Certainly we can make our things like lighting and bins and parking more smart and more efficient. But we also do have some different challenges to different parts of the world where it may take longer or we may be slightly ahead due to you know, our climate, environment and geography.
Yeah, definitely. And I think I really like that, you know, we talked about that global approach because I think that's really important in the smart city space. I mean, I've said it a lot on the podcast, but I think going over and sharing ideas and like you said, learning from both where everyone is like in the pack, because I think we have different challenges so we can learn different things from different people. So yeah, I think that's really important. And I think investing that energy and time and attention and effort and money into doing that, it really pays off. And I think that's maybe where some maybe governments kind of fall down because they don't want to invest that for whatever reason, whether it's money or political or those type of things. But yeah, no, I think it's really important.
Yeah, absolutely. And just on that point, I mean, you know, certainly if there are any government departments, federal, state, or otherwise sort of listening, you know, some of the particularly the federal import-export type departments and facilitators have been great in trying to connect us with some of those regions. So, you know, I think I've received more support from the government than I probably assumed on some of those aspects. So, you know, I think kudos where kudos is due. They really are doing a pretty good job of connecting people to the, you know, to the right resources in other regions. I know you've just been to South Korea yourself. Mm-hmm. So, you know, whether government, you know, assisted in any of your meetings and things, that I guess the fact of the matter is that they're quite happy and willing to connect if you know who to speak to. And I think sometimes it's just reaching the right people that becomes challenging.
Yeah, definitely. And I think you're right. I think there's definitely some appetite, and I think it's increasing. But I think if you can be that kind of global partner by, you know, reaching out and getting that information, that serves a purpose for both, you know, the government and your own company as well. So, yeah, I think it's a good approach for sure. Let's talk a little bit about places that you can pilot smart technology. So do you have any, like, are there any specific characteristics you kind of look for when you're working with a council or a different client or a different area? And where do you think good places are to pilot this kind of tech?
Well, again, I don't want to provide such a wordy answer as I have some of the other ones, but I think often the place to pilot things will depend on what problem you're solving. So, for example, if it was a water quality issue in a river, obviously we're going to be somewhere near the river. And it depends what we're looking for. So are we looking for fertilizer runoff into the river, in which case we might measure at different points, or are we looking at generally, you know, what the patterns and trends look like? So I think sometimes understanding the problem does dictate the location. But what I've also seen is two or three different approaches that councils have taken. So whether it be 3, 5, 10 different use cases in a very small geographic area, like a sports field, a showground, a park, a town centre, what have you, quite a confined space to test and give permission to be our, you know, living lab or our pilot or our proof of concept or what other term they may have for it. That kind of small geography where we're going to test things in a sort of confined way, and then if things work really well, we might roll them out across the whole region. If they don't, then we've tried them in a small spot and we've got a little sandpit to play with. But at the same time, we're not going to go and invest huge amounts of money until we've tested it in the real world. I think that approach is actually one that I'm seeing work really well, as long as it fits the use case. So sometimes the technology doesn't really fit there, but because we're doing it in this geography, we do it here. And it may be a bit of a head-scratching moment. People aren't really sure why. But I've also seen the other approach where it's been kind of spray it across the whole region and then it becomes a bit more challenging to test and play with and demonstrate. And you can probably spend quite a bit more money. So I think the small pilot, especially if you're in that experimentation phase, and then a gradual kind of rollout approach rather than a big bang, has been something that I think is the preferred way of doing things. But I really do think you also need to consider the things you're trying to test for and what the real world is for that particular scenario, because it may not be in a piloted location. It may have to be in quite precise locations. So another one that comes to mind is like your environmental monitoring. You know, if you're looking to see what impact the traffic has on air quality, then you're going to have to be near the traffic or, you know, those points that you need to measure. You know, it may not be just decide to pick a place and pilot there. So, yeah, I think those have been quite successful, smaller locations that are built or that are ideal for the use cases and the questions that you're asking of the experiments, I guess.
Yeah.
And then to scale, you know, I guess whatever's cost effective.
Yeah, no, that's right. No, cool. Well, we talked a little bit about government before. So let's talk about how we can better integrate across the different disciplines, government and industries.
Yeah, so I think this is something I spend a lot of time talking about as well, whether it's IT integrating with operations, technology and civil engineering as we move more into a digital infrastructure type approach, which becomes more related to roads and pit and pipe and, you know, digging holes and putting infrastructure in, which traditionally IT has not done a lot with. So there is some lines starting to blur in terms of the disciplines and the different organizational functions within just a council even, but also the relationship between councils, collaborators or other stakeholders, you know, state, territory or federal government and the local councils. That is all kind of changing. They've always had relationships, of course, but sometimes they're being almost not forced but pushed together because of some of these emerging trends and technologies because, you know, we talked about before, the councils and some of the operational teams will really understand the problem and will really understand what we would need to measure to better understand it. As technology, we understand what sensors and networks and platforms might work, but without the knowledge of the operational team, we still don't know what to do with all that technology. So you really do need both together. So I think that collaboration is really important. And the word and term I've been using quite a bit is around like co-creation and understanding each other's perspectives and working collaboratively in a genuine sense, not just a we sit in the same office kind of sense. Mm. But that is then also, to me, leading into things like our organizational structure and what does that mean if, you know, IT and operations are becoming tightly entwined. What does that mean? And I think that also then feeds into things like change management and communications for the organizations to help them appreciate and adjust as things change, because I think it'll be quite gradual, but there is quite a convergence happening in terms of technology and sections and people and skill sets that it requires. Mm. But as they become more integrated, I guess, people being people, making sure that that's as smooth as it can be without people treading on each other's toes too much, I think is something that is probably more like a bit of a waltz or a dance, you know, to try and get it to fit properly. And so I think different organizations will handle that really well, and I think others will really struggle with that element. And, of course, that's not directly related to technology or smart cities at all, but it's certainly a symptom of the maturity of that space. So I see that actually as quite a big challenge, but, again, another great opportunity for organizations to sort of restructure and change, I guess, how people work together. Mm. But I do imagine that it will be challenging as well because it's not traditionally something that would happen regularly.
Yeah, definitely. No, I really like that. I really enjoy thinking of it as a waltz or a dance.
You're lucky you don't see me dance because it's about as coordinated.
I think my boyfriend would say the same about me. Well, let's talk about emerging trends. I like to talk about the ones that other people aren't talking about. So do you have any ideas about that?
Yeah, this one, I you know, the first part of your question is really easy, like there's lots of trends emerging. And the second part of the question that people aren't talking about, and I think people are getting so excited by all the potential that's out there, whether it's, you know, artificial intelligence, machine learning, whether it's blockchain, whether it's, you know, some of the emerging networks and sensors or wireless charging or, you know, Hyperloop technology or whatever you kind of have as the buzzword of the week. I think people are generally speaking, talking about everything, sometimes in absolutely no context whatsoever, but I really do see a huge opportunity and a huge trend around sensors collecting data and then using patterns and trends and triggers to work out what they mean without a human person having to sit there and trawl through the data that these sensors are sending in. I see that as a really big opportunity in terms of, you know, the companies that do that really well will be able to automate and diagnose problems kind of on the fly. Those that don't are probably going to be very overwhelmed with the amount of data that sensors and these sorts of technologies collect for them. And I see that being a bit of a risk of never achieving the value because you never make sense of the information. And if you kind of think about data, then information, then knowledge, and then wisdom, you know, in terms of moving up that chain, they get stuck at the data or perhaps even the information, but we never get to a point where it informs decision making or it advises us on how to make decisions. And so I see that as a really big opportunity, and I personally feel it's one of the trends that will deliver a heap of value and therefore, in my mind, is very beneficial. I think pulling silos of innovation together is really important too. And in a really high tech sense, this might be robotics with some of that artificial intelligence with, you know, video analytics, for example. And that might be, you know, completely unrelated to smart cities example, but a robot which can see with its cameras and detect when the fruit is ripe on the tree and then decide which ones to pick. So there's two or three quite key technologies that get stitched together for that kind of example. But there are quite a few around now, like the autonomous lawn mowers that we've done with some of the councils that now mow their sports fields, for example. They are fairly dumb devices in the sense that they follow the track that they're allowed to go within and they mow in a fairly random pattern and cover the grass and cut it at a certain length at the top. But when you start coupling the bits of information together, you could say, don't go out when it's raining, for example. So I think in time, as we start stitching all these bits together, as long as we're clear on what we're trying to achieve and what the vision is, there's some pretty massive opportunities. So I think that pulling those silos of innovation together is probably that other big opportunity beyond, you know, analytics and machine learning that I mentioned before, which again, they're both very broad, but putting those two together, although people are talking about them, I think is a bit of a different perspective on the opportunity in that space.
Yeah, definitely. Oh, well, it's been so awesome to talk to you this evening. I'm so glad that we had this chat. And I really only have one last question, which is how can people connect with you?
So we've got a couple of channels. Probably the easiest is smartertechnologysolutions.com.au. Our team often get messages or emails through the website. I think our Twitter is STS_IoT, which we tend to keep up to date for events and things like that. We're also on Facebook and LinkedIn. And, you know, for those who might want to speak to me personally, LinkedIn's probably the easiest. I'm Danny Storey, Storey, on LinkedIn. Please send me a note. I get a lot of requests and I don't always know who they are, so I don't always accept them, if I'm honest.
No, that's all we can ask for, to be honest. Cool.
And thanks for having me, Zoe.
No
it's
worries.
Been awesome having this conversation. And as you can tell, I get really excited with this technology, but it's
too.
Great to speak to other like-minded folks. So thank you for running the podcast.
No worries. Thanks. And I'll put all those links on the show notes so everyone can click away and they can write you a note so they might be lucky and become your friend.
No worries. Thank you.
No worries. Talk to you soon.
Thanks, Zoe.
See ya.
It's the Smart City Podcast. Whoa.
Thanks so much for listening to the Smart City Podcast. Show notes for this episode and all other episodes can be found at thesmartcitypodcast.com. If you have any questions or comments for me or any of my guests, connect with me via email, zoe@thesmartcitypodcast.com, or via the socials. I'm on Twitter and Facebook @smartcitypod. As always, I hope you enjoyed listening to this episode as much as I enjoyed making it.
Smart City Podcast is what you're looking for.